It's the NPR News Update for Thursday, October 23rd. I'm Phil Picardi with the Minnesota News Podcast. Coming up, health officials will keep tabs on travelers from West Africa. A longtime Minnesota congressman faces his stiffest challenge yet. Governor Dayton stumps for others. Targets online buyers. 3M encourages employees to go solar. And we hear about dear white people. First, Minneapolis State Senator Jeff Hayden says two ethics complaints against him are unfounded. Republicans accuse Hayden, a Democrat, of using his elected office for personal gain. One complaint deals with Hayden's role with an embattled nonprofit Community Action of Minneapolis organization. The other says Hayden pressured the Minneapolis School District to do business with Community Standards Initiative. Hayden appeared before an ethics panel yesterday.
I'm offended by this baseless attack on my integrity. I've never realized any personal gain from Community Standards Initiative and in no connection between CSI and my father. The complaints are completely unfounded.
But GOP Senate Minority Leader David Hahn urged the panel to launch a full investigation.
There are things here that need to be investigated. They're either true or false. If true, they're very damaging to the Senate and to Senator Hayden. If false, then that completely exonerates and clears both the Senate and Senator Hayden. And I think one or the other of those things has to happen.
The subcommittee will take up the matter again on the same day it holds a hearing on a separate ethics complaint against Senator Bobby Joe Champion of Minneapolis. Ramsey County authorities say police and sheriff's deputies arrested 23 people yesterday in a domestic violence sweep. Matt Sepik reports.
Sheriff Matt Bostrom says the effort included 52 law enforcement officers from agencies around Ramsey County. He says everyone arrested had already been charged with domestic violence crimes but skipped out on their court dates. Bostrom says officers tried to serve 128 warrants in all and will continue looking for people still not in custody.
What we've noticed is after we knock on those doors, those folks that we were looking for, even though we didn't find them, in these subsequent days, they're going to come turn themselves in.
Bostrom says the effort was part of the National Family Violence Apprehension Detail, which began in Oregon in 2003 and has since become an annual occurrence. This is the fourth year Ramsey County has participated. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A federal judge has rejected another attempt to stop the unionization of state-subsidized personal care assistants from moving forward. Here's Tim Pugmire.
U.S. District Judge Michael Davis denied a preliminary injunction sought by union opponents who wanted to prevent the state certification of the Service Employees International Union as the exclusive representative of the providers. The plaintiffs contend the unionization violates their right of free political expression and association. In his ruling, Davis said the plaintiffs are not required to join SEIU and there's no infringement on their First Amendment rights. Davis previously rejected the opponent's attempt to stop the union vote from taking place. PCAs voted in August to form a union. The National Right to Work Foundation, which brought the legal challenge, said it disagreed with the court's ruling. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The Minnesota Department of Health will soon start monitoring travelers arriving from Ebola-affected countries in West Africa. The Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention announced that the new health monitoring program will begin next Monday in a half dozen eastern states. But it's still not clear exactly when Minnesota will start following up with travelers who arrive here. Lorna Benson reports.
All states will eventually be involved in the monitoring program, which starts next week in New York, New Jersey, Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. Those states will be the first to begin monitoring the health of travelers from Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea because they receive 70% of the travelers arriving in the U.S. from those countries. The Minnesota Department of Health expects to join in the monitoring effort soon. The agency estimates that fewer than a dozen travelers arrive in the state each week from Ebola-affected countries. Chris Ayersman directs the department's Infectious Disease Division. She says the agency will receive a daily list of high-risk travelers headed to Minnesota and their contact information, including where they will be staying. Ayersman says within a day of arrival, the department will call each of the travelers to assess how they're feeling.
You take your temperature, but we're in touch with you every single day to say, okay, what has your temperature been? What are your symptoms? You know, do you have any symptoms? That type of thing.
Travelers from Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea will be required to stay in daily contact with public health officials for 21 days. That's the longest time that Ebola could incubate within a person. Ayersman says the monitoring program will be a lot of work for the agency, but she says she's confident the department can handle it. And she says an obvious benefit of the program is that it will be much easier for the department to intervene in the earliest stages of a possible Ebola case. She says that's a time when a sick person is making decisions that could heighten or reduce the risk of exposing others to the deadly disease.
We'll figure out a plan, you know, what is the best way for that person to reach, you know, medical care. You can call ahead. You can make sure that there are systems in place and that every precaution has been taken.
Alexander Collins is the executive director of the Liberian Ministers Association of Minnesota. He thinks the travel monitoring is a good idea, but he says West Africans in Minnesota want to go a step further and set up safe houses or quarantine houses for arriving visitors to be monitored in.
Family members don't want you to monitor them while they are in their house with their children. That in itself is intimidating. There's a lot of stigma around that.
After the 21-day monitoring period expired, Collins says travelers could move into host family homes. He says the idea would save the state money, but he says currently there's no budget to rent safe houses. Collins called on the state to help fund the idea. The health department says it is concerned about the stigma that some Minnesotans are experiencing in the West African community and more broadly. Ayersman says it's important to underscore that the decision to monitor travelers for Ebola symptoms does not reflect a change in how the virus spreads.
I would hate to have people think, oh my goodness, they're doing this monitoring. That must mean that, you know, something has changed. No, this is simply to, you know, add an additional layer of protection. But absolutely, it has not changed the science. People without symptoms are not infectious.
The health department still has a lot of its own questions about the monitoring program. For example, the agency hasn't heard yet how it should deal with travelers who plan to visit other states after arriving in Minnesota. Ayersman says she presumes that the department will be able to hand off the monitoring of that traveler to another health department. But it's also possible that the agency could be required to follow the traveler for the entire 3-week monitoring period, no matter where the person went in the U.S. Lorna Benson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
7th District Congressman Colin Peterson and Republican challenger Tory Westrum clashed over health care reform in their first debate. Westrum tried to tie Peterson to what he called the failed policies of President Obama. Peterson, the incumbent Democrat, said he's been successful working across the aisle in Congress. Dan Gunderson reports.
Republican Minnesota legislator Tory Westrum repeatedly attacked President Obama during the 30-minute debate.
On Congressman Peterson's watch, we have seen our national debt skyrocket. Obamacare passed by Democrat leadership. The Keystone Pipeline still not built because of President Obama's administration.
Tory Westrum has served in the state legislature since 1996 and is making his first run for Congress. Colin Peterson emphasized his independence throughout yesterday's Prairie Public TV debate in Fargo. He said he voted against the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, and supports the Keystone Pipeline Project. Peterson touted his work on the Farm Bill, bringing federal aid to rural hospitals and funding outpatient veterans facilities in the 7th District. First elected to the U.S. House in 1990, Peterson claimed to be one of the most independent members of Congress.
You know, and I'm the third most likely guy to vote against his party in either party in the whole United States Congress. So, you know, I don't know how you can do any better than that.
The candidates agree on some things. They both support the Farm Bill, a critical piece of legislation for the Western Minnesota District, where the economy depends heavily on agriculture. Peterson and Westrum both decried negative advertising by national groups who are pouring millions of dollars into the race. National Republican ads criticize Peterson for travel reimbursement he gets for flying his airplane around the district.
And I don't like the fact that you've got outside people coming in here bringing in money that nobody knows where it comes from. And it's, you know, it just feels like the outside has almost taken over this race in this district. Now there's, you know, what's being done to me, I'm being attacked for doing my job.
Westrum claimed ads paid for by national Democratic groups are distorting his legislative record.
I am no fan of these negative ads either. The way they are distorting my record and background, I don't support that either. It's troubling to see this kind of outside money trying to attack and negatively portray candidates.
Perhaps the sharpest exchange of the debate came on the issue of health care. Westrom said Obamacare raises the cost of health care for individuals and small businesses in the 7th District. He criticized Congressman Peterson for not voting to repeal the legislation.
You mentioned you voted against it.
I did.
That was 4 years ago. You've multiple times voted to keep it the law of the land.
Because it was a 100% repeal.
And you don't want to support
repealing
it?
No. What are you going to do with the people on pre-existing conditions? The people that have... Well, then how would you get it passed? How would you get that passed?
You'd work bipartisanly, work on pre-existing conditions, students that are up to 26.
Then why don't you work bipartisanly to fix the problems and leave the good parts in place? Why wouldn't you do that?
Well, we can do that, too.
The 7th Congressional District candidates meet again today for a debate at Pioneer Public Television in Appleton, Minnesota. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Fargo.
DFL Governor Mark Dayton has been campaigning this week for legislative candidates. It's a sign Dayton may feel comfortable enough about his own reelection prospects so that he can shift his focus to helping Democrats keep control of the Minnesota House. Tom Scheck has more.
Minnesota House Democrats are hoping Governor Dayton standing in the polls is strong enough to help them keep control of several competitive House districts this year.
Thank you, everybody, for being here today.
On Wednesday, Dayton shook hands with about 75 people at the Prairie Wind Coffee Shop in downtown Albert Lee. Standing alongside DFL House Speaker Paul Thiessen and DFL Representative Shannon Savick, Dayton urged the coffee shop customers to send him and Savick back to St. Paul. He warned of what would happen if Republicans win control of the House.
With a stalemated government once again, we're going to be, you just look at Washington, you can see what happens. When it's just that kind of gridlock and deadlock, and we have a chance to move ahead. We have a chance to continue the progress that we've made over the last 2 years.
Savick is locked in a tight reelection campaign. Republicans need to pick up 7 seats to win control of the House. Savick said she thinks her race could go either way and that Dayton's visit will help.
The governor is very popular in the state of Minnesota, and by having his support, it also helps me in my reelection.
The governor's stepped-up campaigning is the latest sign that state house races are the center of attention as election day nears. In recent weeks, the liberal group The Alliance for a Better Minnesota started spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on TV ads on behalf of Democrats running for the House. Republican-aligned groups are spending about the same amount on behalf of Republicans. The spending is targeted at seats in Albert Lee, Brainerd, Willmar, Burnsville, Maplewood, and Shoreview. Speaker Thiessen said he's reminding voters that without a DFL-controlled House, Dayton would not have been able to fund statewide initiatives such as all-day kindergarten or local economic development projects, including dredging Fountain Lake in Albert Lee.
It's really making the connection with voters that the accomplishments of Governor Dayton over the last 2 years were only done hand-in-hand with the DFL legislature, and that if they want to continue the progress, that connection needs to be made in voters' minds.
Republicans view Dayton's visit to Albert Lee differently. They say it shows Democrats are nervous about holding on to their majority. Republican Peggy Bennett is challenging Savick. She questions why Dayton only got around to visiting Albert Lee as election day nears.
This campaign season, you know, and I'm thinking a politician should be coming more often than just during campaign season.
Bennett also criticized Dayton and Democrats for raising taxes. And even though Minnesota and Fribourne County have a low unemployment rate, Bennett worries the local economy will be unable to compete with neighboring Iowa.
But I look at them, you know, adding $2.1 billion extra in taxes that they then spent on who knows what, some of it good and some of it not so good. I'm just thinking we need to, again, get our state more competitive so that we can bring in some good-paying jobs.
Bennett said she wants to cut workers' compensation taxes and cut spending for projects like the Senate office building and public transit. Bennett, a first-grade public school teacher, wouldn't commit to trying to roll back Dayton's income tax hike on top earners. She said she would champion education and long-term care if elected. Dayton's Republican opponent, Jeff Johnson, said campaigning for House candidates is nothing new for him. He says he's been doing it for a year, even holding fundraisers for a few of them.
It helps both ways. I can help them by maybe bringing some different people into an event. They can also help me because they know the district and the community well and the people in the community, and probably can introduce me to some new people as well. So I think it's just I think it's an effective way to campaign.
Both parties are now starting to shift to turning out their voters. They have each spent a lot of time and money this year on get-out-the-vote efforts. The party with the better field operation could determine control of the House. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News, Albert Lea.
For the first time ever, Target is offering free shipping this holiday season. The perk began yesterday online and will continue through December 20th. The Minneapolis-based company is hoping free delivery will help it win back customers after last year's data breach. Target will also look to its mobile coupon app Cartwheel to drive sales this year. Paula Rosenblum is a retail analyst with RSR Research. She spoke with Kathy Werzer this morning.
So what's your take on this free shipping announcement?
Well, I think that it's what they're trying to do is take Amazon a little bit out of the picture. And honestly, I think their issues are a lot less about the data breach and a lot more about having lost their way over the last couple of years. Their CEO has mentioned that he wants to regain their merchandising authority. So free shipping removes all barriers to any desire to try Target again.
What about the cost to Target? Would this cut into their margins?
Sure. But, you know, when you're trying to win back customers, you're expecting it's going to cost you something. And over time, you know, you have to bring the prices back up. But it's a pretty typical strategy. Best Buy did the same thing. They took a lot of haircuts on prices just so that they could just start bringing customers back into their stores.
Is Target well-positioned, though, for free shipping versus, say, when you know you click on Amazon, you're going to get it very fast?
Oh, I think that they can get the carriers to respond as long as they've got distribution centers that are set up for it, or they can distribute from stores. Sure, I don't see any problem with that.
Let's talk about mobile. Does mobile offer a second chance for retailers like Target that originally missed the boat with online sales?
A lot of people really like Cartwheel because of its discount program, so I think they've done a really good job with that. I believe Target's single biggest problem, well, they have two big problems. One is that they lost their way from a merchandising perspective, and the second is that they had real problems coordinating what they knew they owned in the store with what they could report they owned online. The first is easier to solve over the shorter term. The second one, it's going to take some technology work, and I don't know how far they've gone in that process yet.
But people seem to like this Cartwheel app.
They do. They like it very much.
How do you compare that to other apps?
Well, this one, you can use coupons multiple times. Mm. It's kind of neat in that regard. It's well-liked.
You mentioned Target losing its way in merchandising. Have they made any improvements since that realization?
Supposedly. I mean, that's what I'm reading in the press, that they recognized they'd lost it. The question in my mind is, were they able to get fresh products quickly enough? Because the new product introduction cycle is typically 6 to 12 months. So I'm not sure that they've had enough time yet. I hope so.
Who do you see as Target's main competitors this holiday season?
Well, that depends who they decide they want to be. They certainly don't want to be. They don't want to have Walmart be their competition. I see their competitors more as H&M, the fast fashion companies, and also the discount home goods companies, because that's really where Target made its money. Nobody makes money at grocery.
Paula Rosenblum, I appreciate your time this morning.
Glad to be here.
Paula Rosenblum and Kathy Werzer on Morning Edition. Gail Schuler is Maplewood-based 3M's vice president for global sustainability. 3M is offering employees significant discounts on solar panels for their homes. Gail Schuler talked with Stephen John last night.
How much interest has the offer generated so far among 3M employees?
We have been really pleased with the interest level that we've received from 3M employees on the program. We have had lines backed up during the lunch hour last week when we first gave people the opportunity to sign up, and we've had over 330 people who've already started the process of looking into what solar energy could do for their homes in their areas.
Do you have an estimate as to how many might ultimately take advantage of the program?
Well, we have over 35,000 employees could have the program as an option to take advantage of it. And we're hoping that with the 35% discount that we're getting for the employees on this, that we'll get a large amount of interest.
So you say 35% is the discount. What other kind of benefits besides the discount on the solar panels will program participants be able to take advantage of?
Well, there's a lot of benefits to having solar energy with your home. I personally, before I knew about the program coming on, I went ahead and got solar installed on my home, and I'll tell you, it feels really good to see the meter running backwards, mm-hmm. but it's also something that I look forward to having paid off over time and being more independent from an energy perspective.
In a cool weather place like Minnesota, is the ability to harness solar energy worth the investment?
Well, I was originally skeptical about the idea of doing solar energy in Minnesota because it is a little surprising. But what I've learned is that actually in Minnesota, we have a large amount of sunny days here. And the efficiencies of the solar collectors are actually more efficient in cooler weather than warmer weather. So Minnesota is actually a pretty good place to do solar.
Gail Schuler, one of the drawbacks to home solar panels has been the long time frame for the investment to pay off in terms of savings on one's electricity bill. Do you think the discount on panels offered through this 3M program will be enough of an incentive to get more homeowners on board?
Well, Steve, I certainly hope that this program does provide an incentive for people. It is a program that offers them the opportunity to save on their electricity bills immediately and over the long term. And at the same time, it allows them to be more autonomous from the overall grid. It allows them the opportunity to make a greener choice, to reduce emissions overall, and to make a longer-term sustainability decision.
Well, thank you for the information.
Thanks very much.
3M's Gail Schuler and Stephen John on All Things Considered. Closing out the podcast, one of the more controversial movies of the fall season opens in Minnesota this weekend. Dear White People is a scathing satire on racial attitudes. And UN Care reports if the film looks familiar to Minnesota audiences, that's because a lot of it was shot around the U of M campus.
Dear White People centers on a campus radio show at a fictional Ivy League school.
You're listening to Winchester University's only college radio station.
Dear White People, the minimum requirement of Black friends needed to not seem racist has just been raised to 2. Sorry, but your weed man, Tyrone, does not count.
Sam White hosts the program while leading a campaign against racial injustice at the school. But like all debates about race in America, it quickly becomes complicated. Actor Brandon Bell says the film follows the reactions of a group of students who see themselves, as they put it, as having a black face in a white place.
It's all about their interactions and the tensions between conflicting identities of not just being black, but just being a student, a young person trying to balance expectations, all leading up to a race-themed party that is put on by one of the fraternity groups called Pastiche.
Bell is an experienced actor, but for him and many other members of the cast, this is a breakout role. Actor Marky Richardson says the movie is an attempt to fill a cinematic void.
You know, Hollywood thinks that there's a certain type of black movie that is the only way that will make money. I'm not going to throw out any names, but there is a...
Like Tyler Perry? What do you mean?
Like, I didn't say it.
But there's Kevin Hart? Who else?
I didn't say it.
Said in the movie, though.
I do say the line.
Bleep Tyler Perry,
Bleep
in fact.
Tyler Perry.
Richardson says there is a need for smart, funny, independent films which cater to a black audience and beyond. That's exactly what writer and director Justin Simeon delivers. Dear White People is a take-no-prisoners satire which yanks everyone's chains. While characters in the film are happy to condemn all others' attitudes and actions, no one is guiltless. Attitudes about race, gender, and sexuality come under scrutiny as the movie's campus community twists and turns. It's hilarious and uncomfortable. Brandon Bell, who grew up in Minneapolis, took part in the initial script readings for the film.
I remember a lot of laughter, which was good, but also weird and awkward because it dealt with race and identity, which always seems to be the elephant in the room at times.
The script began life on social media. Director Justin Simeon created a Dear White People account on Twitter. He used it to try out one-liners to see what would get a reaction. From that, he developed a film trailer, which he used to sell the movie in Hollywood. The project took 8 years to get into production, but the actual shooting was fast, just 20 days in total. Bell and Richardson say the University of Minnesota was really helpful as they raced to meet their schedule.
You hit the ground running. You didn't even have time to pay attention to bystanders. I mean, they did a really good job of making sure there weren't too many random students walking around, but no distractions, no drunken college kids going, "Hey, you're making a movie!"
That was the cast.
Thank God.
The cast was all drunk. Yeah, that was us.
The film got raves at the Sundance Film Festival, where it won a special jury prize. Now it's in theaters across the country. Brandon Bell says the aim of Dear White People is to spur discussion.
And there is no answer in this film. This is not the black experience. It's a black experience or experiences. And hopefully people walk away from this film just with a different perspective.
But only after you both laugh and squirm. Ewan Kerr, Minnesota Public Radio News.
I'm Phil Picardi. That's the Minnesota News on your schedule from the NPR News Update podcast. We finish off the week tomorrow.